McKee looks to get it in. Reggie running off screens, but it's Smits with a quick turnaround and miss. Dale Davis can't hit the tip. Longley has it, protects the ball, and on to the finals. For the sixth time in 8 years, go the Chicago Bulls.
That was the sound of Michael Jordan's Bulls, knocking the Indiana Pacers out of the 1998 Eastern Conference Finals. You can watch that series unfold this weekend on The Last Dance. But Jalen Rose lived it, and he remembers every moment. Today, ahead of the final episodes, Jalen recounts what it was like going up against MJ and watching him win it all. Then he tells us what he has learned from this trip down NBA memory lane. I'm Ina Kimes. It's Friday, May 15th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by Marathon. Hi, Jalen.
Hi, how are you?
I'm sad because this is almost over. Are you sad?
I am sad because I'm so happy that the powers that be rushed the documentary. So instead of it coming out in June, it came out in April. It gave us some content, especially on Sunday night. I'm making popcorn. I'm warming up hot sake. Like, I turned it into a whole thing.
Jalen Rose played 13 seasons in the NBA, and he's also the co-host of the Jalen and Jacoby Last Dance After Show podcast.
First off, I'm like, instead of doing two per night, we should have just did one per night. We would have had 10 Sundays. So now I'm like, maybe we need the Craig Hodges episode. He'd be happy about that. You know? So yeah, I'm feeling a little sad. This Sunday's going to be the last one.
Popcorn and sake, huh?
I never really- Yes, indeed. Old school, on the stove, over Redenbacher.
So I haven't seen the last two episodes, but I have a sense probably going to start with the 98 Eastern Conference Finals, of course, Bulls-Pacers. Jalen, you were there. How do you remember feeling about your team's chances headed into that series against Chicago?
So the unique thing about an athlete is that you have to have something that I call irrational confidence. I've sat in a locker room multiple days of my life and said that I was better than Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, Shaquille O'Neal, Tim Duncan. None of them could guard me. None of them had a chance. That's what you have to tell yourself. Well, you might as well not put on the shorts and the shoes. And you know that you're the underdog and you're going against all-time greatness. So for us, we wanted to end the hype. We wanted to shut up all of the Jordan stands. So on the floor, it was like, we're about to eliminate Mike and not have him, you know, have two three-peats. But now that I'm watching the doc, I'm like, how we let this dude laying on the couch with a pot belly, drinking every night, smoking cigars, beat us? That's what I'm thinking. I'm like, we should have beat him. I'm more mad. I'm really more mad watching this.
Speaking of Mike, your Pacers team that year, you were coached by Larry Bird, who obviously knew Jordan very well from his playing days. What did he tell you guys about how to defend on him, both, you know, one-on-one and as a team?
Well, what he told me, because I was coming off the bench, I was a young pup, I had to play the percentages, is that I'm going to put you on 23. If he's scoring you twice, I'm taking you out. That was the instruction. And so I'm like, all right, cool. I'm going to just follow him. That's what I'm thinking in my head so I can stay in the game. But he didn't want him to get into a rhythm. It's like, soon as he gets on the wing and if he gets into his jab with a live dribble, you got to come double. If it's a live dribble and he takes one dribble, you got to come help. Because he's one of the greatest athletes that we've ever seen. And he plays basketball with his tongue hanging out. I think that don't get talked about enough. I remember standing in front of him as a former Piston fan. When I was little, I used to be like, if I ever play against MJ, you know, I'm going to smack his tongue. And I remember standing in front of him, I'm like, I don't want to smack his tongue. That's nasty, actually. But it was just a trip that he was playing basketball and being so great and so graceful, yet he had his tongue out the entire time in honor of his dad. It was just so great, if you're a Bulls fan, to see.
Can you try to explain to people what it was actually like to guard him, to be on the court with him?
So he was the quickest player. He was the most athletic player. I'm going to rewind a few plays so that you guys can Google him. The play that John Starks, and I'm not looking at anything. You know I don't prepare for my show, so I'm sorry. I love you, but I didn't prepare for this one either. That play when John Starks is coming from the middle and he twinkle toes and goes baseline around Oakley and jumps and dunks over Patrick Ewing, that's like a ballerina. Like, he's a 6'6 player. The artistry when he went in his bag against Larry Bird and the Celtics and scored 63 on a 30-win team. 30-win team. Made the playoffs, Mina. We covered this stuff. 30 wins. The double pump at the free throw line over Craig Elo. Doug Collins always talked to me about a picture that he has where it frames when MJ took off and where Craig Elo was standing. And it was before MJ. In six frames, he passes MJ, and he's like 4 feet away from him, out of bounds, laying on the ground as he makes the shot. That level of being spectacular is something that nobody has been able to achieve since MJ.
Can you remind folks of how he played in the Eastern Conference Finals?
In the Eastern Conference Finals, the one thing about going against their squad and about MJ, he and Hakeem Olajuwon were the two people that I was like, they're the best players on both ends. And he and Reggie had a history because other great shooting guards in that era, Reggie, Mitch Richmond, Clyde Drexler, Michael Jordan was determined to make sure those guys didn't get rings. MJ wanted to make sure that Reggie wasn't, and his Pacers team that he led wasn't going to make a name off of him. So every time we made a run, it seems like he was still able to slash to the basket, make his open shots, get to the free throw line, and was still that dominant player.
So the Bulls won their first two games. Then they went back to Indiana. You guys held court. But then in game four, there was an incident that led to you being suspended for game five.
Harper and Reggie Miller.
This has been brewing since game three. Right in front of the Chicago bench.
The NBA owed me some money, for real. We were on the Indiana Pacer bench. Reggie gets tied up behind the Bulls bench, maybe 75 feet away. I come off the bench 3 or 4 feet, and I'm looking 80 feet away to see what's happening to our Hall of Fame player.
Let's see if someone moves off the Indiana bench. Watch the left of your screen. Right there, somebody.
That's
it.
Jalen
could have
Rose.
Been Jalen Rose.
Right there, that's Jalen Rose.
And I get suspended for game five for leaving off the bench. Like, that's just bad institution of a rule. And not that I was an all-star player for that team or nothing like that. But I remember watching it in the Ritz or the Four Seasons. It was the Ritz or the Four Seasons. And I went to Detroit a little bit. I ordered a lot of lobster, and I just sat there, wanted to feel like I was big time, and I was watching the game. And then we got blew out that game.
Yeah.
We got blew out that game. Then I felt bad because I was like, man, maybe I let down my team. But then I was more upset at the league because I felt like I shouldn't have got suspended.
I'm sure it'll be a major plot point in The Last Dance, episode 5.
No, episodes 11 through 20. We need, you know what I'm saying? I need to hit up Jason Aaron, the director. Yo, we need the Jalen episode.
the director's cut is all Jalen Rose. So the Pacers lost game 5, probably because you weren't there.
That's exactly why.
You guys won game 6 and you forced a game 7 in Chicago, which was the first time an MJ-led Bulls team had played a game 7 since 1992, a first time they've been tested in a while. Take us through how it wrapped.
So I just remember getting on a bus. We had a police escort zooming through traffic on the 94 freeway. And I'm like, yeah, it's happening. We about to do this. That's all I recall thinking, is that we're about to do something special. And being a young player, look at the talent that they had. They had Phil Jackson, one of the greatest coaches of all time. Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, two of the top 50 players of all time. Steve Kerr made a huge jumper late in that game, a heartbreaking jumper. Oh man, it's the first time. Oh, this just reminded me of something. Oh man, I feel like, it's like a concussion that just came back to me.
Oh no.
So late in the game, we had a jump ball. I think it was Michael Jordan, who's 6'6", and Rick Smits, who's 7'3".
How big is this jump ball right now? You get this jump ball, you got a chance to go up 5 with 6:30 to go.
Michael can really jump, but Smits is 7'4". Smits tipped it, but right to Pippen.
Smits, I think, gets the tap, but Scottie Pippen steals it, and he kicks it to Steve Kerr, and he hit a huge three late in that game.
Kerr can tie it, and does.
So when you brought his name up, when we just talking about, it just hurt. But yeah, they had those guys, and we had Reggie Miller, Mark Jackson, Chris Mullin, Larry Bird on the sideline, Rick Carlisle, who went on to be a championship level coach. So there was some star power in the building. It was a marquee stage, and it just really hurts to think back at we were so close yet so far away from getting to the finals that year.
You were, as you said, a young pup at the time. How did you feel, you know, after losing to a guy you had idolized for so long?
I was in the fourth quarter made two jump shots in a row.
Rose, double pumps, hits, plus one. Buschler is on Rose. Around an Antonio Davis screen for the jump shot that evens the issue at 69.
They call timeout. So I get a chance to jump and be like, hell yeah, let's do this. And Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen walked to the bench with their heads down. And it was like 6 or 7 minutes to go in the game. And Mina, my guy, the reason why I'm living in the suburbs right now, eating all the lobster I want for the rest of my life and have a black card. My guy, Larry Joe Bird, took me out of the game and didn't put me back in. My guy. I get on the bus after the game. I didn't have to do interviews. I definitely wasn't invited to the podium or nothing like that. I took a shower pill, basically. Like, I'm going to run on the bus, and I'm going to pout, and I'm going to be mad. I get on the bus. Larry sitting there to the left. I'm like, I'm going to walk past him and not even talk to him. I'm mad at him. And he like, you know what? My bad. I should have got you back out there. And I was like, you know what? I love you, Larry. I just love you, Larry. Whatever you say. I'll just run through a brick wall for you. Whatever you say. Next year, I was starting and doing work. So it was just crazy that he was that honest. And to be around that all-time greatness was such a boost to my life and my career.
Coming up, Jalen tells us whether he thinks Jordan pushed off on his game-winning shot in Game 6 of the 98 Finals, and offers his final thought on why he considers MJ the GOAT. Hi, guys. Given everything that is happening in the world right now, most of us are buying things online. I saw that AT&T started doing two really helpful things for those who want to buy a new phone or device online. They are offering fast, free, non-contact delivery and curbside pickup so that online shopping is as simple and safe as possible. On top of that, they have a flexible return policy so you can shop at ease. You can visit att.com to learn how to shop online from the safety of your home 24/7. Subject to change, restrictions apply. So, Jalen, you go home after the heartbreaking loss in Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals, and you watch Jordan take on the Jazz in the Finals. What is your strongest memory from watching the Finals that year?
Well, my high school teammate, who I was in his wedding, Howard Eisley, played for the Utah Jazz, and I definitely was talking to him, and we act like, yo, this is what you do against MJ. I remember those phone calls. Like, yeah, they going to do this, they going to do that. yo, y'all got this. And so I was rooting against them because I wanted Utah to win and I wanted to see Howard win. And so to watch him play that final game the way he did and the way it ended, I was like, he the GOAT. He should never play again. The crossover at the top, the push off, the free throw line, follow through and make the jump shot. That was Superman.
Jordan, open. Chicago with the lead.
What was going through your head when you watched Jordan hit that shot over Brian Russell?
I couldn't believe it. Because if you think about how they got the ball, when Utah had possession, I thought they was about to win the game.
Malone is doubled. They swat at it and steal it. Here comes Chicago. 17 seconds.
Like, it was set up for history to look at Mailman and John Stockton a lot different. They don't get the love that they deserve by people because we ring count and they never won one. If they would at least beat Mike one time, when we looking at these scoring lists and we see Karl Malone in the top three, we'd be like, oh, man, Karl Malone got to get more love on these top 10 lists or John Stockton. And so for him to steal the ball coming baseline the way he did, the team didn't call timeout, to go one-on-one and make the game-winning shot and walk off and drop the mic, he should never have played basketball again.
Do you think he pushed off?
No, I don't. That ain't a push-off. Hand used to be a part of the ball on a swat down or a block. He used his momentum against him. And he's saying to Doc, he was always on his toes, Byron Russell. And that wasn't the first time he made a shot over him. They faced Utah back-to-back seasons. And in the previous season, on the left wing, he made a game-winning shot over Byron Russell as well. So it wasn't a push-off. He used his momentum. He just gave him a love tap, but you still got to knock it down, and he did.
Jalen, let's talk about the documentary as a whole for a moment. You know, one of the themes of the documentary is sort of the cost of competitiveness, right? The cost of being a champion. Does it come at the expense of being a quote-unquote nice guy? As we've seen in the documentary, Jordan could be really hard on his teammates, and he's aware of that, and he's aware of his reputation. He got a little bit emotional about it. Now, I think watching that at home, everyone's like, yeah, that's what it takes. But most people aren't Michael Jordan as well. How do you regard his competitiveness, how he treated others, and I guess whether other athletes can do the same thing?
Many powerful people, even if they don't realize that they're doing it, minimize, dismiss, and take for granted in a lot of cases the people that work with them and or against them. That's just a human nature that for some reason, sometimes when you get an ego, it makes you feel like that you're like above or better than someone else when you're really not. So when you're as powerful as MJ, and then you had to go through the Celtics, who were as skilled as any team ever, the Lakers, who were as flamboyant as any team ever, and the Pistons are as tough as any team ever, the only way you're going to beat those guys is to do what they were doing. That's the only way. And your call for an organization that hadn't won it, the elevated greatness of Magic and Bird is appreciated because they went to teams that won championships before them and after them, but yet they still raised the bar and was excellent. But for players like MJ and Tim Duncan that went places and won championships with a new coach, Phil and Pop, what ends up happening is you have to be multiple voices. You have to be the voice for the front office because players know you're involved directly and indirectly who they're going to build around you. For the coach because he's not established. And then for the other 14 guys because you're the best player. If somebody plays for Pat Riley, Nick Saban, they don't have to be the bad guy all of the time or Coach K because those guys are the leaders. And so if you're MJ in that case, you have to play all of those roles in that situation. And based on that, you got to know who deserves a pat on the back and a kick in the butt. And I appreciate, though some accused him and my brother Charles Barkley as one, of selectively bullying, you know, Scott Burrell and Steve Kerr, he was going to do that to anybody. Hmm. And based on those dynamics, that's why you sacrifice friendships and being liked in order to achieve your ultimate goal. And I'm pretty sure based on what he's accomplished, that he wouldn't change anything about the journey.
So, Jalen, now that we are coming to the end of The Last Dance, do you think the series will change or reshape public opinion in any way?
I have a public service announcement on your great platform. You're doing a terrific job on multiple shows. I've seen you on like 5 different shows in one day. I just have to say this. If you think Michael Jordan hasn't accomplished more and hasn't achieved more than LeBron James,
oh boy,
you don't know what greatness is, and you don't know what the term actually means. We're not hating on your generation, Mina. I know. All the people on your timeline, I know. Y'all got all of that. I know you TikToking. I know you are. I know it. They pants so tight they can't reach in their pockets. I know. But LeBron James ain't better than that black cat with them hoop earrings and those big pants. I'm telling y'all. It's not even close. He got 3 championships. The other dude got 2 three-peats. That's what I want y'all to know.
All right, after this Sunday, when that next Sunday comes, you know, I'll just be on TikTok, of course. But what will you be doing, Jalen?
I will be bored out of my mind and still having the same debate because we find ways to entertain people and sports isn't happening.
For now.
For now.
Thanks so much, Jalen.
Thank you. I appreciate the love.
Coming up, the Jordan era in Chicago may have ended with the Bulls' 2nd straight triumph over the Jazz in the finals, but the most important quote might have happened in their first matchup. We're presented by Marathon. Now, more than ever, we have to look out for each other and count on each other. And Marathon wants you to know that you can count on them for high-quality, top-tier gas. While we are aware travel might not be top of mind, there might be times where you have to hop in the car to run an errand. Maybe you have to drop off groceries and supplies to your family. Maybe you've become an amazing baker and want to drop off a few dozen cookies on your best friend's porch. Or maybe you just want to drive around to all of your friends' homes simply to wave from a safe distance. But before you head out, remember to fuel up at Marathon. Marathon gasolines are formulated with STP additives. They keep your vehicle running at peak performance by optimizing fuel economy, removing those ugly deposit buildups, and reducing emissions. Remember, wherever you need to go, the people at Marathon are behind you all the way. Marathon, fueling the American spirit. Here's another story I want you to know. Over the last few weeks, we've been highlighting some of our colleagues' pieces on Michael Jordan, and I wanted to bring on ESPN Daily recurring guest star Dave Fleming, who wrote about one of the most famous quotes from the second Bulls three-peat. So everyone who's listening and has no idea what happens in the finals between the Bulls and the Jazz, which you'll learn about this Sunday on Last Dance, maybe stop listening now. Dave, you decided to take us deep inside a particularly iconic moment from that series. Game 1, 35.8 seconds left on the clock. Michael Jordan has just hit a free throw to tie the game at 82. Then the unthinkable happens.
Michael Jordan missing on the second attempt. The score remains tied.
What happens next?
He is really, 30 seconds away from being lowercase goat Michael Jordan? The Jazz bring the ball down the court. They try and set up a high pick and roll. It results in a bad 3-point shot by John Stockton. Karl Malone gets the rebound and is fouled by Dennis Rodman. So he goes to the free throw line, with 9 seconds left and a chance to basically win game one of the 1997 NBA Finals.
Again, if you don't know what happens, don't keep listening.
What I like about this, Mina, is what you're saying is I've essentially ruined the entire Last Dance. Thank you very much.
So he steps up, and what happens next, Dave?
Scottie Pippen, of all people, a guy who has normally kind of shrunk from the spotlight, especially late in games in the playoffs, and a guy not really known for quick, off-the-cuff quips, he sort of sidles up to Karl Malone and says, "The mailman doesn't deliver on Sundays."
More like, "The mailman doesn't deliver on Sundays."
Yes, that actually is Scotty. Is that you?
And how does Karl Malone respond?
With one of the all-time greatest, biggest choke jobs in the history of sports.
Oh, he missed the ball. Rebounded by Jordan. And the Bulls have the timeout.
And I think that's why we were so interested in exploring this line of trash talk, because it really has to be the greatest line of trash talk ever delivered, because it so affected this game, Karl Malone, Michael Jordan's legacy, The Last Dance, this podcast, the world as we know it, Mina, was changed by this single line, the 6 greatest words ever uttered in trash talk history.
So for your story, you looked at sort of the context around this. First and foremost, I have to ask, did Scotty have a history of trash talking?
The greatest thing about this trash talking is it was delivered by a guy who never talked trash. And people thought maybe that Jordan had fed him the line, because Jordan was a relentless trash talker. Mm-hmm. Another thing that makes it so great and unique is that in this moment, Scottie Pippen, who never says anything, delivers this line that just drilled down into Karl Malone's subconscious and just destroyed him as a free throw shooter. And it's the psychology of it is really fascinating, because according to a PhD, a doctor who has studied trash talk at the University of Connecticut, Scottie Pippen sort of accidentally tapped into Karl Malone's deepest, darkest insecurities.
He also bailed out Michael Jordan.
Yes, and I think Jordan probably reluctantly sort of credited Scottie Pippen with saving his ass right there, because if Malone makes even one of those free throws and the Bulls lose that game, all of a sudden it's, oh, Michael Jordan, the greatest NBA player that ever lived, actually bricked a free throw that could have won him a game in the NBA Finals.
Dave, how do you think this moment, this incredible line, impersonated perfectly by me, if you ask me, affects Scottie's legacy?
In a large way, it really helped save his legacy. He had some really bad, questionable moments late in games, in critical games in the playoffs, whether it was his migraine that he suffered in game 7 against the Pistons, or him sitting out the last 1.8 seconds against the Knicks. This was a rare moment where he saved Michael Jordan and he saved the Bulls. And everybody who you talk to said that's what made it so great, which finally they got to write and say nice complimentary things about Scottie Pippen saving the day instead of blowing it.
Thanks so much, Dave.
Thanks for having me.
I sound more like him than you. I'm Mina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Steve Martin, Ryan Nantel, Andy Tennant, Eve Tro, Chris Tuminello, and Aaron Vale. Special thanks this week to Russell DiNallo, Blake Foman, Troy Farkas, Eve Wolf, and Jeff Arias. I'll talk to you Monday.